podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's John Gibbons for the Anfield Wrap. We thought it'd be useful to do a bit of an update on what's been going on in Paris and obviously both sides of the channel in terms of keeping the pressure on and regarding how Liverpool fans and Madrid fans and football fans in general were treated in and around the Stade de France for the Champions League final. I'm sure you'll have seen on Twitter the stern and weather Dan Austin's doing in terms of both appearing on news here and over there, but also translating things like on Tuesday, which was a hearing, a Senate hearing regarding what happened. Well, first of all, Dan, thanks for coming on late on a Wednesday night.
Don't worry, it's fairly relentless, so I don't really have a body clock on anything anymore. So this is absolutely fine, and it's still light out as well, yeah. Which I think doesn't really help with knowing what's day and what's night.
No, absolutely.
So we just crack on, John. We crack on.
We'll crack on then. Where we wanted to start was you tweeted sort of Tuesday night regarding. Just to sort of, you know, raising awareness of a sort of how unique this type of day was in terms of French government and how even more rare it is that people from another country would be invited to speak. So can you just expand on that first of all, before we get into what was actually said?
Yeah, so just so that people know kind of what's going on there, what's happening is a French Senate inquiry into what happened at the Stade de France. So the French Senate is made up of, it's sort of the equivalent of the House of Lords in the UK. Mm-hmm. So these are not kind of active party political kind of politicians. They are linked to a particular political party when they're nominated. But by the time they're doing their roles, they're more sort of state people, which means that by and large, they tend to be older men. There are some women, there are some people that are slightly younger, but these tend to be older men. The French Senate may do investigations like this a few times a year, but it's not by any means just a kind of rolling thing that they do. This is not what it's kind of set up for. This is not its overall purpose. It's not like it's a sort of inquiry mechanism. They just have the ability to do that. And they would obviously, by and large, just as would be the case in the UK, investigate domestic affairs related things. And you know, to all intents and purposes, this is a domestic affair in France. It has been, aside from the fact that they've had elections, and this does play into that anyway, this has been the biggest news story in France since the match happened.
Right.
I can't sort of, you know, convey that enough. I've been outside of this country or just dealing with people in France for the majority of the time since the match. But the sort of quietening down in certain periods that's happened in this country has by no means at any stage happened in France. This has been ongoing. So basically what the Senate does anyway is it has this inquiry. They audition is the word they use. They audition people that they think are relevant to speak to before the Senate in order to kind of ascertain what they have to say, what their interpretation of events is. And then eventually at some point they come to a conclusion. They give recommendations. Because it's a Senate investigation, those recommendations are not necessarily legally binding. But the idea is that they go through the process at their own pace. There's kind of no timeline on it. And we see what happens. What that means, because things are mostly domestic affairs, is that, yes, it's rare that these things happen anyway. But the idea of foreign football fans being invited to speak at such a hearing is really rare, and I think in itself is a really positive thing and a very good sign. Obviously, you know, we all know that, you know, something like this happens, obviously you should speak to the fans and you should listen to what their interpretation of events is, but it was by no means a given that would happen. And I think the fact that they've been receptive and that, you know, possibly with a bit of pushing from people in media, you know, I was kind of making a case in the French media appearances I was making, but also from the organisation Football Supporters Europe, which has done brilliant work and was really helpful with the Liverpool fans that appeared. They did agree and they listened on Tuesday, mm-hmm. Which was really useful. And to be honest, you know, I watched, I think it was over 4 hours of Senate hearings on Tuesday from various different people. There was UEFA. There was also the mayor of Saint-Denis, as well as all the football fans. And they seemed really sympathetic and empathetic. They were thanking what they refer to as their Spanish and English friends for having appeared and travelled to France and given testimony. They seemed to me to understand the scale of kind of what happened. You know, one senator who is a former sports minister of France, his name is Patrick Cannon. He's a socialist senator now in the Senate, but he used to be the social sports minister. He used the word apocalyptic to describe what Joe Block from Spirited Shankly and Ted Morris from the Liverpool Disabled Supporters Association had told the Senate. So I got the feeling that they were kind of professionally and emotionally open, if that's sort of a way of putting it, to what the football supporters were telling them. So that to me was quite reassuring. And to be honest, the whole Senate investigation so far, I would describe as having been quite reassuring.
To sort of do the negatives next, if you like. The first person to speak, I think I'm right to say, was Martin Callan from UEFA, who it seemed to me like he started like he was going to be, you know, quite reasonable, and then went all in with the lies that have already been disproven, with the, you know, washing his hands, and, you know, if there was any blame, it certainly wasn't with them.
Yeah, so there were two people that spoke from UEFA. Callan wasn't actually the first. I'm just going through an email to try and find what the first fellow's name was. I will have it.
Julian something, wasn't it?
Julian, and then his surname began with Z. He was a native French speaker. So Julian Zilberstein was his name. So he's a native French speaker. He spoke for, I would say, probably a little more than 5 minutes. He just kind of did an introduction of who him and Martin kind of were. Pretty much, well, in fact, everybody else that has spoken at the Senate has stuck around, whether in person or over Zoom, to answer questions from senators afterwards. Zilberstein did his introduction and then immediately disappeared, which I found quite strange anyway, because that isn't the process. They're meant to be there to answer questions. It seemed to me perhaps as though he didn't really want to be there for the part when questions were going to be asked. Either that or he has a really urgent dentist appointment or something and didn't tell anyone, I don't know. But one of the two, I would suggest. And then Martin Callan, who is UEFA's CEO of events, spoke after that. And I've been thinking about Callan's testimony an awful lot since, because I just can't really understand it. So, you know, obviously every Liverpool supporter that was there sort of knows the truth of what happened and the various organisational failures that led to a situation that was immensely dangerous. But also the Senate has already identified these failures. So the two men that lead, that are co-chairing effectively the Senate inquiry, are two men called Laurent Lafon and François-Noël Buffet. So they are two French senators from theoretically a centre-right party, but as I say, they're statesmen more than party politicians. They gave a press conference after a security visit to the Stade de France last week, in which Lafon in particular said, "We know already that every single authority involved in the organisation of this match failed at one point or another." So this Senate inquiry is identified, you know, whether it be the rail strike that was going on, whether it be the policing of the event, whether it be the French Football Federation's involvement in ticketing and kind of preparing for the match. They've already basically said everyone fucked up at one moment or another.
Mm-hmm.
Callan spoke for about an hour and 15 minutes, including his answering of questions. And the only topic he engaged with at any point was fake tickets. He did debunk, for example, the 30,000 to 40,000 figure that the French ministers, Darmanin and Oudéa Castéra, came out with in the aftermath. He debunked that. He said, UEFA don't agree with it. He insisted that about 2,600 fake tickets were found. He said that Liverpool supporters had created a situation outside the stadium where it was too occupied, where there was crushing because so many people with fake tickets or without tickets had turned up. I can't quite ascertain yet whether Callan did that, and you know, Callan doing that means UEFA doing that, whether they did that in order to attempt some sort of whitewash where they think, despite the mounds of audiovisual evidence that supporters have provided and shown in public, whether they thought that they could still blame fans and get away with it and that would be fine, or whether actually maybe what they thought they were doing was, because they've got their own investigation and they can't maybe for some sort of legal reason talk about an awful lot of things yet, because they don't want to prejudice that the only tangible thing they thought they had was this 2,600 fake tickets figure, because they think that they were the people that found that, and therefore they can nail that down as something tangible and say, well, this is the only thing we can talk about, because that's the only thing we have objective knowledge of at the minute. First of all, that knowledge is not objective. Callan, throughout his testimony, made various sort of inadvertent admissions, I would say, that amounted to proving that UEFA's ticket system can be completely broken down by one faulty pen and some dodgy Bluetooth connection, which is staggering and actually quite terrifying, to be honest. So the focusing on the fake ticket thing didn't work anyway, because they can't possibly know how many fake tickets there were, because he admitted, because of the fake pens, the faulty pens, and because of the dodgy Bluetooth, some people with legitimate tickets were told theirs were fake, as we've seen with, you know, Andy Robertson's family, and I think there was something with Joel Matip's family as well. I'm sure there'll be loads of people that were listening to this who were told their ticket was fake, even though it was perfectly legitimate and brought from Liverpool Football Club. So I can't tell whether they actually sort of think that's a thing they can hang their hat on as an explanation, or whether they just erroneously think, well, that's the only thing we have to go on so far. Let's not talk about anything else. Let's just mention that, and therefore we can be quite non-committal in this inquiry. But if that is what Callan and UEFA thought, then they should have, from a communications point of view, considered the fact that if you go to a Senate hearing and just spend an hour and 15 minutes talking about fake tickets, then even if you don't necessarily mean to, you are blaming the supporters. You are essentially saying that that is the reason for all of the chaos, violence, injuries and trauma that followed. So I still can't quite ascertain whether, because in his demeanour and things, he was nowhere near as combative as what the two French ministers and the chief of police, Didier Lallement, were when they were telling mistruths about fan behaviour and things. He seemed more sort of conciliatory in his tone, if not necessarily what he was saying. So I'm not sure if that was actually maybe inadvertent in some way, but the end result was he spent over an hour only talking about fans, and there were some just objectively incorrect things. Like, he claimed, for example, that there was misbehaviour from Liverpool supporters at the Kiev and Madrid finals that led to UEFA intelligence, which meant that we were all going to try and break into the stadium and maybe go on the pitch, which is just objectively false. That none of that happened. You and I were both there, John, together at both of those matches. There was no misbehaviour. There was no issue with policing. There was no issue with ticketing at any stage. The whole thing was just strange. Like when the French ministers spoke and they told their mistruths, I understood why they were doing it. Like, I obviously knew that it was not true. I was translating it for people and knew how angry people would be. But I at least saw the point. I knew they were trying to protect themselves. I knew that they couldn't possibly admit any fault, because then they would basically be owning up to everything. I just didn't get Callan's testimony, to be totally honest. I don't see what was in it for UEFA. Because, as I say, so much evidence has existed. So much backlash from the British and French public and media has sort of been encountered by the version of events that the French state has tried to give, which simply isn't believed as a version of events by nigh on anybody. So I'm just not sure what he was playing at, to be honest. And I wouldn't entirely be surprised if having seen the quote afterwards and the reaction afterwards, if perhaps a few people at UEFA also aren't really sure what he was playing at and what he was saying, to be honest. It didn't feel like a particularly coherent argument he was making. And I also just didn't see how it benefited UEFA to try and make that argument in any way.
Do you think it is a suggestion from that then that UEFA maybe aren't taking this process very seriously, or you know, because to send someone along who, as you say, didn't seem to have a, you know, much of a plan in terms of, you know, what he was going to say and how, I don't know, just maybe suggests to me that they think, well, we'll just go and we'll just talk for a bit and then it'll all be done.
Perhaps. I think they knew they would look awful if they didn't contribute to the Senate inquiry, so they had to do something. What I should add as well was Jordan the question, and one senator actually said to him, listen, we've already established that counterfeit tickets were not the issue of these, were not the cause of the problems. then listed a variety of organisational failures from the French authorities and UEFA and said, why don't you tell us a bit about that? Callum responded by talking about fake tickets again. So I think there's a combination of possibly UEFA feel like they don't know enough to speak with any authority yet, but also that they're really scared about saying anything. They're probably quite scared maybe about being sued by somebody or by being taken to court by somebody in some regard. And they felt like just pinning things on the fake tickets would work. But as you know, as I described before, everything that Callan said about fake tickets can be is up for debate, can be entirely disputed. None of it can be relied upon because he admitted to such basic fundamental errors in the ticketing system that the border on organizational incompetence from you know a big event organizer like UEFA, that essentially I don't think if I was on the Senate inquiry, if I was kind of one of the people that was working through this and thinking, well, you know, how can we use this testimony to draw conclusions? I don't think he actually said anything that was particularly useful to them. Because a lot of what he was talking about has already been disproven. Mm. A lot of it is pure conjecture. Some of it, he demonstrated himself, you know, reasons to not actually believe what he was saying. So if I was a French senator or someone that was kind of on the administrative side, would come away and think, we've just lost 90 minutes there where we didn't actually particularly learn anything aside from UEFA not being particularly helpful so far at the very minimum. And as I say, the tone in which Callan was spoken to and received by the senators was in stark contrast to the supporters.
So we'll move on to the supporters then, and I think it was notable. You alerted to me that just before they started with the supporters, there's a quote from Francois Noblefait, who says, let's be clear, before we start, we know that English football fans were not the cause of what happened at the Stade de France. And that set the tone, really, for what happened next, which was, I felt, you know, as I say, and I'm largely based on your quotes, this idea of, we want to find out from you what happened. You know, you were there, and it was an appreciation of eyewitness accounts that I really appreciated as someone who was there. Do you know what I mean? It was. I don't know. It's funny, isn't it? You started this by saying, "Well, of course, you should speak to the fans," but it doesn't always happen. You know, in a way, I'm praising quite a basic thing here, but it doesn't always happen. Really, this idea of I'm going to go into the process believing what these people are going to say.
No, something can be basic but a big deal at the same time. You know, those two things are in conflict, but that unfortunately is just how life and power often works. The quote from Buffet was key, I think. First of all, I think it just helped to settle everybody that was about to speak, because, you know, this is the co-chairman of the inquiry basically saying, listen, we believe you, by the way, before they actually started to speak, which to me is really important. And then afterwards, you know, everybody spoke with immense professionalism, with an awful lot of emotion and an awful lot of passion, but really pertinently. So I thought that just in the way that the speeches were delivered by Joe, by Ted from Liverpool, also by Emilio Dumas, who represented Real Madrid fans, and also by Ronan Evan and Pierre Bartolomei, who represented Football Supporters Europe, everybody's demeanour was much more believable than, for example, the Minister of the Interior, Gerald Almanan, who delivered a really bizarre performance when he spoke a few weeks ago. He was not speaking in full sentences a lot of the time. He was using his hands an awful lot. He was speaking really quickly. You know, I would suggest it was sort of the body language and behaviour of a man who was making things up as he went along. Whereas every football supporter, and particularly the two that spoke on behalf of Liverpool, when they spoke, they were composed, they were determined, and they were really forensic. And you know, in a setting like this, that's absolutely vital in terms of getting your point across, especially through an interpreter as well, because obviously Joe and Ted spoke in English, and then it goes to the senators through the use of technology and earpieces. That to me is vital. The kind of not just what they said, but the way that they said it. They were all listened to. You know, sometimes some of the politicians that have spoken or the chief of police have been heckled a little bit, have been stopped while they were talking by a senator to say, well, you know, come on, talk about this or whatever. Everybody was listened to. Pretty much every senator that asked questions to all the football fans, thanked them for having turned up. It was really respectful. And as I say, you know, I'm not sure that the people that weren't there, even, you know, even potentially including Liverpool supporters, maybe even people that are listening to this, I'm still not sure that people quite get how horrendous and how serious it was.
Yeah.
You know, there was genuinely a really borderline chance that people were going to die.
Yeah.
And I do hope that people understand that, you know, this is an immensely grave situation. There could have been an absolute catastrophe. It was only the good behaviour of Liverpool supporters that ensured that it wasn't. And the accounts given by Joe and Ted, but in particular Ted, who gave examples of supporters who've been in touch with him. You know, he gave a plethora of them. He must have listed, you know, 10 or 12 different supporters' experiences, all from disabled Liverpool fans. And he listed physical injuries for one thing, but the sheer mental trauma that these people went through, it's absolutely staggering. And what, from having watched all the Senate hearings and from having watched the press conferences, and I've also spoken to Laurent Lafon, who's one of the co-chairmen, on French media broadcasts two times. I've spoken to him directly. The impression that I get from them is because they're statespeople rather than kind of like party politicians, basically they don't actually really have, you know, a direct interest in protecting the reputation of the government, because it's not their responsibility. They're not the same. They may be part of the state, if you like, but they're different institutions. What they are really concerned about is damage being done to the reputation of France around the world. As I say, you know, these are statesmen. These are people who represent their country and are very proud of their country. The idea that you know, people in wheelchairs, children with autism, blind people have been trying to enter the football stadium with a legitimate ticket and have been tear gassed by police officers, have been robbed by gangs of local young adults, have been hit with riot shields by police officers. I get the impression that they are quite sickened by that and are quite ashamed of it, really. And you know, again, if I were to sort of put myself in their shoes, the idea of pretending like that didn't happen or that it was fans' fault, that would just serve to damage the reputation of France even more, because this is a news story all over the world. The images and videos have been shared all over the world. There are Liverpool fans all over the world. I think they know they can't just, you know, they can't just make this go away, and it's also just not in their interest to make it go away. I think they would like to demonstrate, you know, the faults that were made, the errors that were made, and also tangible ways in which to improve in the future, because, you know, they want France's reputation to be maintained, and they also want to be able to host events like this again in France in the future. And I think they know that if they were to just kind of whitewash that and say, oh well, it was the Liverpool fans, it was the English people, that wouldn't actually be possible, because it wouldn't be believed. You know, there was a poll conducted by a polling company. I forget what's the word, John, when in English when they take like political polls and stuff, surveyors, like YouGov. What's YouGov?
Well, is it market research? I guess it would be, you know, surveys. Yeah, you know,
there's,
yeah.
There's a specific way I'm thinking of. I've lost it, sorry. But anyway, they conducted one of French people after Darmanin and Uday Castelar's testimony, and a minimum of 76% of French people said that they did not believe their version of events, which, you know, blamed Liverpool supporters, said there was this mass forgery of tickets, yada, yada, yada. So, you know, these are intelligent people. François-Noël Buffet, that said that, about, you know, this not being English football fans' fault before Joe and Ted spoke. But he's a lawyer by profession. You know, he's a forensic man. He's dealt throughout his entire career in arguments in a legal sense. You know, these people aren't soft. These people, to my mind, you know, maybe in some ways they'll be proven wrong, but there's been no evidence of it so far. These people aren't playing, you know, some little political game. And I think that's good. Overall, you know, I would say that Tuesday was a good day. Yeah. On the inquiry, Tuesday was a good day for, you know, our version of events, the truth of events being proven and being demonstrated. And everything that went on over the course of all of the hearings over 4 hours was sympathetic and empathetic.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I want to pick up on that you said there. And there was one comment that I thought really landed really well. And I can't remember if it was Joe or Ted, but they talked about Liverpool as a global football club and the importance of that, really, and the realisation, if it's needed, and it sounds like largely it isn't from what you're saying, but a realisation for anyone who's maybe outside who thinks, you know, oh, we can just say this about the people of Liverpool and it'll be fine, or we can just say this about English football fans and it'll be fine. But because of the size of Liverpool and because people travelled, as was pointed out, from all over, you know, we met people, we were out there together, met people, you know, from America, from all across Europe who come to be part of this, you know, celebration, really. And so I think the size of Liverpool and the size of the football club almost kind of, you know, helps in this scenario, really, because it's not we'll just besmirch a small group of people and we'll get people on our side and it'll go away. And I think that was a really, you know, valuable point by whoever it was who made it. And apologies for not sort of knowing that.
It was Joe. He said that you know, Liverpool was a global club. He made that point, and he also said that this had been a news story from America to Australia, which is absolutely true. I think that point is understood, but in the kind of rhetoric around everything, that they have been referring to Les Anglais, the English, in sort of every regard. It's not necessarily always kind of meant as a nationality thing. Sometimes they are just using it to differentiate between Liverpool and Real Madrid, and, you know, it's just a they view it as a synonym, basically. But, you know, it's clear from what we were told about police memos from February. What was in the 30-page report that the Prime Minister of France effectively signed off on the other week, that an awful lot of what happened to us is simply based on xenophobia.
Yeah.
You know, what happened to Liverpool fans there would have happened to Manchester City supporters or Chelsea or Tottenham or United or whoever, because they had this backwards, simply incorrect idea that English football fans are hooligans. Just by default, and we should therefore all be controlled and treated like criminals. That idea is obviously incorrect. You know, football hooliganism in the big English clubs does not exist, simply. You know, we go to Old Trafford every year for away fixtures, and you get off the bus or out the car or off the train or whatever, and you're just with them. You just walk into the stadium alongside them, and you walk out, and they're still there, and there's no problem. You know, people in this country are trusted to be human beings at football matches. They are not in France. And that kind of national prejudice they have added on top of that. Also, you know, it's fair to say that relations between the United Kingdom and France are around about as bad as they've been, you know, at any point in modern history, certainly since the Second World War. And that doesn't help, you know, in the past 3-4 years because of the Prime Minister that we have, because of the decision to leave the European Union, their view of English and British people has gone through the floor, essentially. So, you know, in terms of the way that they plan for the event and they plan for the arrival of the English, that certainly hasn't helped either. But that's xenophobia. That's an example of bigotry, essentially. And I think that, You know, sort of proving that wrong in multiple ways has been important. So Joe saying that in the Senate about there being international supporters is absolutely vital. I think one of the sort of useful things about me being in France and being on loads of telly programmes in person and speaking French is to be able to say, well, you know, I got hit by a riot shield by a police officer outside your stadium. You know, I've sat on this news programme for 30 minutes with you. do I come across like a football hooligan? Do I come across like someone who's violent and needs to be controlled? I haven't, you know, kind of overtly said that on the broadcast, but that's partly the point that you're trying to make by simply being there and speaking their language and relating to people. So an awful lot of what I think has been done so far in really different ways is to kind of deconstruct that image that they used to build their strategy for the match. And so, you know, Mealy, Ted and Joe taking the time to turn up and being so professional and so thorough, being really polite with all the senators and the people on the stand, that's immensely useful, because it proves that when Gerald Darmanin goes in and talks about Liverpool fans as hooligans, or when Didier Lallement, the chief of police, says, you know, we had this bit of intelligence that meant we had to police it like this, it just simply proves it incorrect. One senator who was asking Joe and Ted questions even said, sort of as a preface to his question, the fact that we are talking about Liverpool fans as hooligans is unbelievable. And you know, that to me, again, is another small example. There were so many of them listed throughout the whole thing that demonstrated a genuine understanding on their part. And again, maybe at some point I'm going to look like a dickhead over all of this because it'll be some sort of whitewash at the end. But I assure people that up to now, in terms of the Senate inquiry, there is no evidence of that. There is no evidence that they're just going to go, oh, well, it was the bloody English football supporters. They seem to be taking the work really seriously and thoroughly.
I'm conscious of time, and you're probably on radio 3 times more tonight, so I won't keep you too much longer, but I think
it's fine.
Everything you've just sort of said there is really sort of helped as well by the Real Madrid fan, Emilia Dumas, who spoke in French, was pointed out straight away his got roots in France, his love of the country, really, and spoke as someone who, you know, wanted to effectively make things better. And I think, you know, how his solidarity with the people of Liverpool, I thought it was wisely pointed out that, you know, these football clubs played each other 4 years ago and everything was fine. You know, you can't mock up some rivalry here that's going to lead to fighting because we played each other far too much in recent years and everything has been fine. And I thought, you know, I thought he was great as well and worthy of praise and also gave a, you know, a performance, if that's the right word, and probably isn't, you know, that was very beneficial.
Emilio was absolutely excellent. You could not have crafted a better person. So Emilio is a 59-year-old Real Madrid supporter. He's been a member at Real Madrid for around about 3 decades. He said at the start of his testimony that he's been to 8 European Cup finals. 3 of them now have been in Paris, including in the 80s against Liverpool. The way that he spoke was so thorough and so passionate. He is 50% French. He spoke in perfect French throughout the whole thing. And he spoke about the shame that he feels on behalf of France as a half-French person, that in a country as big, as important to France, that something like this could happen. As I say, he's been to 8 European Cup finals. He said objectively that he has never seen anything like it at any football game. He gave really specific examples of issues that Real Madrid supporters have had. You know, there were massive queues. There were people having the tickets stolen at the turnstiles. There were major issues with policing afterwards. Some of the local young adults, he said, sexually harassed and assaulted female fans in their fan park. The idea that Real Madrid fans didn't have any issue at the final and only Liverpool fans did had already, to be honest, been proven untrue. You just had to simply look on the internet to find that out. But Emilio absolutely ripped apart the version of offence presented by French authorities, and doing so in perfect French, showing a genuine adoration towards that country as well, came across really immensely powerfully, I thought. You know, obviously Joe and Ted's testimonies were excellent, and the senators were really great with them, but having that from kind of the other side, backing up after they'd already spoken what Ted and Joe said and adding his own personal bits of experience in there and demonstrating his sort of expertise as a football fan, was absolutely vital. And Ronan and Pierre from Football Supporters Europe did an excellent job in finding him, because you know, Real Madrid, Spanish football in general, but Real Madrid aren't necessarily as organised sort of as a supporter base as us. There's no kind of obvious union like Spirito Shankly to go to. So, I mean, quite how they found him, I don't know, but they couldn't have built a better one. I was so pleased when he spoke. He's on Twitter. If anybody, you know, would like to say nice one to him or just kind of follow what he's doing. He's also got a really big platform. He runs a Real Madrid blog of some sort that's got about 50,000 Twitter followers. I can't off the top of my head think of his exact Twitter handle or the handle of that. But if you look on my Twitter, then I thanked him today, and tagged him, so you'll find it. But he provided genuinely an immense service to every Liverpool fan, but also every football fan in Europe, because, you know, one of the end goals of this whole thing has to be to make sure that the football supporters in Europe are more safe when they go to football matches. And Emilio and everybody that spoke, you know, Joe and Ted especially, did a brilliant job of that on Tuesday. But, you know, we sort of spoke a little bit earlier about maybe people not, you know, who weren't at the match, and I'm certainly not saying everybody or trying to sort of cast aspersions here, but I do think there are some people who don't necessarily quite get the level of seriousness of everything so far. I would hope to encourage everyone to sort of be really active on this, because, you know, we've heard testimony from people who quite obviously would like it to go away as quickly and as quietly as possible. It's up to us, it's up to all of you to make sure that doesn't really happen, to be honest. And I know that that's a horrible thing to ask, because it's the summer, the footy's not on, and everyone should be able to crack on with their own lives, but we are where we are, essentially. It sort of has to be done. So, you know, if you were a fan that was there, then and someone for whatever reason from any media organisation, bar the obvious big baddies, you know, gets in touch and asks you to maybe tell them what happened or give a version of events, then I would encourage people to do it, please. If you can, you know, even just support fans that were there who may be going through a difficult time, if you can do that, that would obviously be immensely useful. If you see things that maybe I've written or that someone else has written about it, if you could read them, first of all, that's really useful, because the more people that read things, the easier it is to go to people that run news organisations and say, listen, you should give me more time to work on this. I should continue to work on this, because, you know, it's really important. And secondly, people are reading it. So, mm-hmm. you know, all the benefits. Also sharing those things so that they get passed on to other people. You know, if you see anyone kind of putting their account out online and you think that it's really useful, pass that on. You know, if you feel like there is any sort of email that you can send to anybody that you think would be useful, then again, I would encourage you. I'm not asking people to kind of do stuff all day long. You know, everyone's got lives. I'm not kind of trying to take that away from you at all. But if you just feel that there's some really small thing that you can do, whether it's retweeting a video, whether it's, you know, giving one of your mates a call that was there or whatever, I don't know, then please do it, because it's honestly so useful. You know, if it wasn't for how organised Liverpool supporters are, there's not a chance we'd be at this point. We would have just been all labelled violent hooligans and told to fucking crack on. So, you know, we've successfully avoided that for a start, but we have to continue now to make sure that not only is the truth understood, because I think it already is, but that truth is rendered official in you know, sort of political, possibly even legal terms at some stage. But also that there is pressure on the authorities. The longer that this remains a news story, the harder it is for anybody to wriggle out of it. And essentially, you listening to this are the people that can make it a news story by reading things, by sharing things, by telling your individual, you know, kind of experiences of what happened. So please do. You know, I know loads of people are doing it already. If you are, then thank you very much and keep doing it. And if you haven't yet, you know, for whatever reason, absolutely fine. But if you feel at some stage like there is something you can do that would be helpful, then obviously, you know, tons of people all around the world would appreciate it an awful lot. So yes, please do so. And thank you for what people have done already so far.
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of excellent sorts of suggestions in there on how we can keep the pressure on. Just one thing I would add is that tonight on Twitter, Ian Byrne has shared a letter he's written to Nadine Dorries, asking for an urgent meeting on the events around Paris and for the British government to back demands for a full apology and independent investigation by the French authorities and by UEFA. It's signed by just under 20 MPs, I think it is. As I say, it's on Ian Byrne's Twitter. It's signed by, yeah, it looks like sort of 17, 18 MPs, most of them local to Liverpool for reasons that are obvious. Maybe a good idea if you could have a look at that, and if your MP isn't on there, maybe you could encourage them to sign. It's never too late to co-sign a letter.
That is an important thing, by the way. If you were at the match, or even if you just care about it, to be quite honest, and you're not from Liverpool, please write to your MP. It doesn't have to even be very long. Especially if you're outside of Liverpool, if you're outside the UK even, please do write to whoever represents you in a political sense. Because the more politicians from the more places, the more countries that maybe get in touch with their French equivalents and say, what happened here? Why are people getting in touch with me and saying that they got hit with riot shields in a game of football in your country? Or why are people getting in touch with me and saying that they need therapy because of a football match in your country? Then the more pressure's on them, the more questions they have to answer, the more time it takes up in their working schedule and just their minds. So, if you're at the match, especially if you're not from Liverpool and you haven't done that yet, and you're able to take the time to, then again, that is something really very, very useful indeed that you can potentially do.
Absolutely. So what happens next to your sort of knowledge, Dan?
It's not entirely clear, to be honest. So the nature of these Senate inquiries is that they just sort of go on until the chairman feel like they're done, I think. I don't think there's loads of people for them left to speak to be honest. They might try and speak to Liverpool and Real Madrid themselves, is what I could think of. As I say, one of the senators suggested reinterrogating Gerald Darmanin.
Yes,
on the basis of the fans' testimony, because essentially in the week since he spoke, everything he said has been disproven. A few of them want to get him back in there to basically say, well, you know, respond to these things that the fans told us, and essentially, why did you not tell the truth? So that would be really useful if they can get him back. I have no idea. You know, this could be next week. Maybe they feel they're at a point where they can say, you know, we've got conclusions we can make. It might be weeks. It might be months. I don't know. They also, in the past couple of days, Bouffet and Lafon have spoken about the idea of converting their investigation, their Senate investigation, into a full French parliamentary inquiry, which is significantly more serious, really, and even rarer again. What that would mean is that, like, that would be more legally binding. And I believe that, depending on the outcomes of that, there would be potential for some people to possibly be legally prosecuted over things that happen. So, you know, there's not that with the Senate inquiry as things stand. They would just kind of come to the conclusions, publish a report, have a press conference, and then the idea would be that the pressure from that would maybe cause consequences, but they can't force them. The idea of this parliamentary inquiry would be to essentially force them. Over the course of speaking to more people and doing more research and more work, they will decide if they think that is useful. If they decide that eventually, no, they're not going to do that, that may be because they think it's not useful, or they may think it's because there's a chance that it would just sort of get covered up. I don't know. Essentially, they've got an awful lot of options, and they're not restricted by time schedules, which is, in a sense, is frustrating because you don't necessarily know, you know, when you're going to get to an end point. But it also means they're just quite free to keep going for as long as they feel, which I actually think is probably for the best, rather than just setting an arbitrary deadline and going, well, we'll have to say something then. The UEFA inquiry, Martin Callan said they're expecting to last about 3 months. So he said some point in September. They should have a report ready. He said that they've already started interviewing people. He didn't mention who that was or in what context they were interviewed or anything like that, but he said it's begun. As I say, from his testimony and just UEFA's general silence and refusal to answer questions sent to them, I wouldn't really expect much of an update from them until it gets to that point. But that doesn't mean the pressure cannot be put on them in different ways. So, you know, we may not get kind of a direct statement from UEFA for a little while, but they can be made to worry. They can be made to be concerned about the tone of their reports and about the validity of their report. So that's important. That's pretty much about where we are, I think, in terms of kind of the administrative schedule. Liverpool have obviously amassed, I think it's about 9,000 bits of testimony from fans who told them, you know, what was going on there. I think that probably Liverpool won't necessarily publish anything on that because, you know, they've got to kind of wait for what the authority line is and stuff rather than doing their own investigation first and just saying, well, this is what happened. But the fact that Liverpool have got that information at hand at this point and it's being sorted through by staff at the club is really useful because it means that if any kind of, you know, misinformation is put into a conclusion at some stage, the evidence is there to counteract that misinformation. So, you know, things are moving along, I suppose, in all these different ways. It's just quite hard to pin them down. I just sort of wait to see what these senators say and what the Senate website says about who they're going to speak to next and stuff like that. So again, people are welcome to check my Twitter, all of the things that are on there for updates and stuff like that. But you know, it's not like there's this kind of grand overriding schedule or anything that's going on. It's just sort of in fits and starts. Like I don't know currently when the next thing is, but I might wake up tomorrow and one of the chairmen's put a press release out that says they're interviewing 7 people next Monday. And suddenly I've got to sit at the laptop all day long again, concentrate as much as I possibly can on people with accents that are really difficult to follow and stuff like that. So just basically keep your eye out. And as I say, do absolutely everything you can to promote things with it, whether it's things that people write or the fact that someone's going to speak in the Senate or whatever it may be. Just try and do the little bits that you can to help, and it'll be honestly immensely appreciated. And I believe that it will help us get to a goal that we're all satisfied with in the end.
And very last one. Lots of people keep asking me how you are, Dan, and I'm like, I think he's all right. I mean, he's tired. But apart from tired, how are you?
I don't feel much other than tired, to be honest, John. So we did that one, it must be over 2 weeks ago now, before I went back to Paris. Yeah, it must be 3 weeks, in fact.
Yeah, I think you were going the next day.
Yeah, so imagine that, but with 3 weeks more without really going to sleep, is sort of where I'm at. It is like just difficult. I don't mean like sort of even emotionally difficult or anything. Like just 4 hours of listening to French Senatorian is quite taxing. You know, it's not by any means manual labour. But that takes like a lot of mental focus and stuff. So I'm looking forward to the point at which this sort of is over. Every time I sort of try and think about when it might be over, it seems to get further and further away because someone says, oh, well, our polls will be in September, or parliamentary inquiry, that could take a year, things like that. So I'm not sure, you know, when this kind of thing will stop. But until then, you know, it's sort of, as I say, kind of everyone's responsibility to keep cracking on. And, you know, the fact that no fucker in this country learns a second language has really come back to bite in this scenario, I think, because, yeah, you know, if it was just sort of like English media stuff to be done, then I could pass an awful lot of it on. But I do feel sort of obligated to keep doing it in French and stuff like that, because I think it's so useful to be able to engage with them in their language. And I don't mean to come across like I'm complaining about it or anything like that, because I think it's obviously really important. And I know that if anyone else sort of had the same experience at the match I did and also spoke the language and also had lived in Paris and that kind of thing, that they'd do exactly the same thing. I just sort of tick a variety of boxes that suit them, and therefore I'm happy to sort of continue to talk to them as much as possible and do as much work on it as possible. And people, you know, I don't see an awful lot of messages at the minute just because my phone's constantly going with different things. But the ones that I do see from people saying, you know, nice things or sharing things that I'm writing are, again, very much appreciated and stuff. And, you know, the sharing stuff, as I say, is also tangibly helpful. So, yeah, if you've sent me a message at some stage and I've not responded to it, which is 99.9% of them, then thank you. I've just had a bit too much on to read through them and get back, but it's still appreciated.
Yeah, I've seen so many people say they're going to buy you a pint in town, and I can't wait for everyone to find out what an antisocial bastard you really are. That's something for us all to look forward to.
You know what? I did like the 4 or 5 days in Paris, like so 2 or 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, and was absolutely knackered by the end of it, because it was do a telly show, get in a taxi, do the next telly show, yada 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 for like 4 days. But the Liverpool Paris Supporters Club took me out the last night I was there, and we went to they took me to what for about 50% of the front of the building appeared to be a Chinese restaurant, and then the back 50% was the best karaoke gaff in all of Europe. And Christ, did I need it! It was such a laugh. The whole bar at one point was up doing what's it called, John? Walk out the door, don't tell
me. I will survive.
The whole bar was up doing it, singing it in a slightly odd French accent. And it was one of the best nights I've had in ages. All of the people at the Paris Supporters Club were lovely. It was one of the birthdays. They're having a great time, and they were kind enough to invite me to do it as well. So again, also, if any of them listen, thank you to those people. Because after an extremely intense few days, that was a useful bit of a let off and stuff.
Well, thanks to you, Dan. I mean, I'm loath to ever praise my friends, like we all think. But, you know, you say that everyone's responsible, but obviously we're all aware that you are taking on a lot more responsibility than most. So thanks for everything, and obviously thanks for joining me this evening. Appreciate your time. And it is John Gibbons with Joe Bloth from Spirit of Shankly, Chair of Spirit of Shankly. And I wanted to get your feedback, is that's the right word, Joe, or just reflections on what you've done this week. And I'm sure people have seen you were over to the Senate to speak. Almost a daunting thing it must have been a little bit, but also I saw your tweet saying it was a proud moment to go over and represent Liverpool supporters, you know, in that setting. So, yeah, I mean, how was the day is a bit of a general question, first of all.
Yeah. Yeah, hi, John. Yeah, I mean, listen, the week's been mad, to be quite frank. You know, as soon as we got news and confirmation last Friday that it was on for Tuesday, it was all hands to the pumps to get ourselves geared up and ready. Tactical management as well. But, you know, leading up to that was obviously a bit fraught. You're right about it being like a prestigious opportunity. An honour, really, both, you know, from a representing the fans point of view, but also to be in the Senate. From what we understand, we were the first two non-French citizens to actually address Senate, which is quite an honour. And when they told us that before the start, it was like, oh my God, it's even worse than I thought, you know. but to be honest with you, you know, we flew over there on the morning from Manchester, yeah, all good. And then when we got to the Senate, the senators were outstanding. They were really welcoming. Didn't think for one minute that they didn't want us there. And I think, you know, as you have heard from the chair of it, Bouffet, he actually said this. We know that the fault wasn't with football fans, you know, and what a great lift that gives you as soon as you walk in, really. So couldn't have been better, John. And, you know, let's see how much of an impact we can make, and maybe we'll talk about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you made a huge impact, and, you know, the way you spoke and the way Ted spoke, but also the Real Madrid supporter as well, were also powerful sort of in different ways, really. And, you know, you've just said there, you know, getting the nod on Friday to go on the Tuesday, it's hardly sort of any time to prepare, but I guess all you can do in those situations is be authentic and speak honestly and speak the truth, and that's what you all did. But that's all you can do, I guess. But also that's what I felt that the people listening to you sort of took from that, really. And I ended up thinking about the sort of ironic contrast between how we were prejudged going to a football game and how they basically decided that we were going to be hooligans and policed us that way regardless, to the difference between how you guys, there was no sort of prejudgment really. It was like, well, let's listen to what these supporters have to say.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think one of the newspaper headlines we saw the following day was something along the lines of the first to be affected by the events, but the last to be listened to, which kind of sounds like a little bit of a negative. But I think on this occasion, it worked really well because what we were able to do, obviously, was you know, Ted was outstanding, in, outstanding, but also heartbreaking in terms of the stories he was telling that had happened to fellow fans. And then my bit was meant to be about, you know, kind of a bit more forensic, but because of we went last, we were able to dissect, you know, the lies that are being told by mm-hmm. the succession of people, you know, even UEFA on the morning of the event. You know, I mean, UEFA, why don't they just give up and say, you know what, we've been caught out here. Yeah. We're dead sorry. We've made an monumental cock up. We'll put it right for next season. Do you think you can help us? And, you know, suddenly, you know, we'd still not trust them because we know what they're like. But to carry on digging in the morning, you know, it's just astounding, really. And you mentioned, you know, the Emiliano from Madrid. We'd not met him, we'd not spoken to him before. And when he comes on, you think he's going to give account of you now, isn't he? So everything that me and Ted have just said, he goes, oh, it's great. But he didn't. And, he, you know, clearly the impact it had on Madrid fans was as incredibly powerful. You know, the difference was they hadn't been really policed in the same way that we had. But they still had the problems coming out. And you'll have heard, you know, some of the challenges that they had from the locals. But interestingly, you know, without prompting, he said, we had paper tickets. And everyone looked around and did they? Because according to UEFA in the morning, they all had digital tickets. And then he said, and actually the biggest problem that they had was that local youths were nicking their tickets. And then when they got collared, they gave them back a fake ticket.
Oh, wow.
Well, there you go. Hang on. I thought only Liverpool had an industrial scale, you know, fake ticket racket going on. You know, so without even prompting, he actually scored two cracking goals without even knowing he was doing that, really, given what had taken place. So as you said, all you can go there is tell the truth. Ironically, in the Senate, you don't have to tell the truth.
Okay.
Which is just a bit bizarre, but it is like that. So that's why they've said that they want both the prefect of police, but also, more importantly, the interior minister. They want him back in that room. But actually, they've been talking since then about having a parliamentary inquiry, which then they have to speak under oath,
right?
Which is an entirely different kettle of fish then for them, isn't it? So I think you know, we left the room thinking they believe us far more than they believe their own.
Yeah, which is interesting in itself. Do you think, you know, it's hard to know what happens next, isn't it? Because, you know, we're living in a different country from a lot of the investigations that are going on. There's obviously investigations across, you know, the board, really. UEFA, yeah. Liverpool Football Club are obviously doing their own work around the 9,000 statements that they've got on. So, you know, there is much more to come, Joe. But are you optimistic that, you know, you asked on the day, you said you would demand a full apology and a retraction of the lies. You know, you know, it's hard to say, isn't it? But do you think that's possible? Do you think that's probable? Kind of where are you with your levels of optimism, I suppose?
Yeah, I'm still up there at the moment. I mean, obviously, we were incredibly optimistic on Tuesday. I think the first thing is, I mean, I felt kind of sorry for all the senators because each and every one who asked the question said, we're sorry on behalf of French people, you know, and actually it's not them who need to be sorry. It's actually individuals who need to be sorry because of what they said, what they did, how they said it and what they planned for. So I suppose the downside to me is that this is about responsibility and accountability. So are the individuals prepared to do that? You know, and we heard Ted say, look, you know, it Darmin and the interior minister, it, you know, really should not only apologize, but actually he should walk. You know, whether he walks or not, I don't know. But at the same time, he certainly has to retract what he's going to say. But that takes human dignity, doesn't it? And if he hasn't got it, it's hard to demand it. But you're right about the independent investigations. There has to be, you know, a double-edged approach to this. The French have been great in terms of listening to us. They still need to make sure that they've got the truth out there in terms of from their people so they can investigate it properly. So they need the level of expertise that we've been recommending. But UEFA, listen, we can't lose track of this. All the focus has been on France this week, which is, you know, right because of the timing. Mm. But UEFA are the consistent culprits in this. You know, John, every fan knows, year in, year out, UEFA mess everything up. and therefore, you know, it's them we've got to get kicking and screaming around and saying, and I think that's where our biggest challenge now of the summer is, because they've just gone silent.
Yeah.
They said the stuff yesterday. They only have to say the stuff because they thought they had to go to the Senate. They were quite happy just not be nudged along here until such time as, you know, the Champions League starts next season, and they say, oh, it's a bit late to do anything now, isn't it? Let's crack on. So we've got a massive job, I think, over the summer, you know, ourselves, obviously, LDSA, yourselves, all fans, but also Liverpool Football Club and Real Madrid and their supporters, to make sure we get UEFA around that table, make sure that independence inquiry isn't just led by an individual that they've imposed. Make sure it's got a panel of experts on. And I don't mean necessarily fan experts. I mean experts in ground safety, in stadium management and all those kind of things. Right legal people who've been through all the Hillsborough processes that we've all had to suffer, so that it's done properly, because you only get one chance at this, and let's make it work now.
And that's where, you know, in terms of the pressure on UEFA, that's where, you know, Liverpool Football Club kind of, I guess, need to take the lead in that scenario, because we can, you know, put pressure on, you know, in terms of, you know, you've done fantastic work here and people are listening to supporters, and that's great. But in terms of UEFA, I guess they're more likely to listen, you know, to Liverpool Football Club, who are one of their crown jewels. Let's be honest, you know, European football without Liverpool, you know, does have less than a shine. I don't think that's an arrogant sort of thing to say. And so, you know, I think Liverpool, you know, have been very good throughout this in terms of the support that they've offered supporters, if that's not too much of a mouthful, but also, you know, I'm sure they've been regular contact with you guys. But in terms of putting the pressure on UEFA, their best place to do that, I feel, I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, it is. You're right. And this is also about, this is horses for courses, isn't it? This is, you know, this. So going in front of the French Senate and saying the stuff we did, we can say that Liverpool Football Club can't.
Yeah.
And, you know, they, as you said, the right alternative for that then is, in terms of sitting in front of UEFA and saying these things, it's right that it's the football club. We go in between. I mean, the thing that's joined these two together more than anything else, though, is Football Supporters Europe. So, you know, obviously, hopefully fans understand that. In terms of our supporter structure, there's obviously ourselves from a team and a club perspective. There's Football Supporters Association, which is the kind of UK collective. And then Football Supporters Europe is obviously the European collective. But UEFA will only listen to the FSE. So that's why we've been obviously working with them throughout the 3 weeks since the 28th. Because they're the ones who are going to have the toe in the door and the foot in the door, and hopefully the whole body in the door, taking us with them. Us going to UEFA would be pointless. So you're right. Absolutely. Liverpool will play that game, I think. And we'll be working with them in unison. And to be honest, you mentioned about, I'm sure we're in contact with them. Yeah, it's daily about, you know, making sure we've got the right people, making sure we're making the right noises, making sure we're saying the right things together and separately as necessary.
Yeah. And it's solidarity amongst, you know, the Liverpool family, I guess, but also, you know, wider, as he says, amongst football fans generally. And that's why, you know, it is so important that we stand together on this. And I thought something that you said was really powerful, you know, at the start of your testimony, where you said, you know, we're not after revenge here. We're not after heads on spikes. What we want is improvements for how football fans are treated. And that's the case if Manchester City get to a final next year and Chelsea after, you know, whatever supporters are in a final. You know, I will wish what I experienced on my worst enemy in Paris, and I didn't get the worst of it by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, likewise.
And so I think it's, you know, it is about putting rivalries aside here and say we all need to be treated better, and that's something we can work towards, you know, if we do stick together.
Yeah, definitely. And it, I think the other side of this as well is like, let's not fall into the UEFA trap of it just being the English who are shouting.
Yeah.
You know, that's why it's really important that Emiliano did it from a Madrid perspective. Because if it is two European, not non-English teams in the final next season, we want them to have the same level of voice. So one of the things that we're working with FSE on is they've got their Congress next month. So they want us to go across really and present a united front with them, with Real, possibly with Rangers, and who did they play? Leipzig, was it?
Yes,
Leipzig.
It was. Yeah.
So that we've got a absolute collective, because we all suffered.
Yeah.
You know, they were badly treated in the Europa final. Yeah. So that you're absolutely right. That's where the collective works. And then, you know, then we've really got to think about, well, what action can we take across Europe as supporters? What is it that we really want to do? Sometimes, you know, this is the problem, isn't it? You know, I heard you say this often, you know, we get to the Champions League final and then we start complaining about the number of wheelchair spaces or the number of tickets that get allocated and all that. And it's all kind of too late. This time we've got a massive opportunity to springboard this and make the improvements now. I think there's some very, very simple improvements we can make to UEFA early doors about Istanbul next season and anything else. I'm willing to put that work in. I know lots of other supporters are willing to do that, but it might not be for us, but it's for football, and yeah, that's the key.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to finish off, Joe, and I really appreciate your time in a really busy week. You know, there'll be supporters listening to this who are still struggling with what happened in Paris. I think I am, to be honest with you. I think it's affected me sort of psychologically, and I was speaking to my wife about it last week when we went away, and I said it's affected me a little bit more than I thought, and not just the night, but also the accusations after and the injustice and how it sort of, I don't know, appeals it kind of hits you in terms of what's right and what's fair, and so a lot of us maybe have been affected a little bit more than what we thought we would have been. And you know, I mean, me and you have been around the block, we've seen sort of lots of things, but I've never since sort of experienced anything like Paris, and then had the accusations that sort of came after it, really, and everything that brings up. That there is, you know, support out there for people, isn't there? There's Liverpool Football Club have put something out last couple of days along with public health here in Liverpool, just advising us all to look after ourselves, to look after each other, and to reach out and speak to people. And you know, that's something I'm sure that the spirit of Shankly, you know, would encourage as well, really, is that, you know, about sticking together, about talking to each other if you are sort of struggling, but also giving ourselves a bit of a break. Like, we've been through something traumatic and we need to sort of reflect that, really.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely spot on. And I mean, you know, from a personal experience, I've kind of been lucky that I haven't had that downtime yet, because it's just been full on. But I know there will come a time like that. And I think it's me being prepared for it, like you just said last week, was kind of your bit, you know. But for anyone else out there, you're right. And one of the things that me and Ted were absolutely committed to on Tuesday was making sure that we tried to give people hope. And we hope, you know, certainly the feedback that we've had has been like, it's been off the scale. It's blown my mind, really. And I think if we've given that bit of hope for now, but if you are struggling, yeah, please seek it. Please look out for support. Please talk to people. Don't let it fester away. Don't let it hang in there. You're right about LFC. Spirit of Shankly have also got, we put money aside as well, so that, like, we had the Help Us Here campaign. We're more than happy to support people, particularly with those who, you know, might have lost their incomes over recent weeks as a consequence of what happened in Paris. But more than anything else, even if it's not financial, just please take the time to manage your own mental health and mental well-being, because it's an important facet of this, and none of us will know what impact that night has had. It might have hit us straight away. It might hit us later. But somehow or other, we've got to make sure that we get that right.
Absolutely. Joe, thanks so much for coming on today and for representing us so well on Tuesday. And obviously to everyone at Spinister Shankly for continuing to fight for support rights and supporter causes, and to making sure we are treated as we should be in football grounds. Joe, I'm sure we'll speak to you again between now and the end of the summer. Yeah. But thanks a lot for coming on today.
Brilliant. Thanks, John. Thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.